Welcome back. Today we are attempting to tackle what might just be the biggest question of all.
No small task.
Not at all. We're talking about the meaning of life.
And for so many people, that question isn't just, a late-night philosophical thought.
Yeah.
It feels incredibly urgent.
It really does. But don't worry, we're not just going to float around in abstract theory. We have an amazing guide for this deep dive, Terry Eagleton and his book, The Meaning of Life.
It's such a sharp book. Eagleton gets right to the heart of what he calls the modern crisis of meaning.
A crisis of meaning. What does he mean by that?
Well, for most of history, meaning was sort of a given. It was baked into your religion, your community, your social role.
You didn't have to go searching for it.
Exactly. But in our world, a world of secularism and, capitalism, those traditional guide rails have really eroded.
And when they disappear, it leaves this huge void.
Yeah.
And a lot of anxiety fills that space.
That's the core of it. So Eagleton's mission is to find a path between two traps. On one side, you have simplistic, dogmatic answers. And on the other, you have this kind of cynical despair, a sort of nihilism that says there's no answer at all. He's looking for that middle way.
So the goal is to reframe the question entirely. We stop asking, what is the meaning of life?
As if it's a secret to be found.
And instead, we ask something more practical. How do we create meaningful lives together?
Precisely, and that's a much more powerful question.
Okay, so a question this huge needs a guide with a pretty unique perspective. What makes Terry Eagleton so qualified to tackle this philosophical giant?
It's a great question because he's not just a philosopher. Eagleton is one of Britain's foremost literary critics and cultural theorists. He's taught at places like Oxford, Cambridge. His background is incredibly broad.
So he's not just looking at this as an abstract problem.
Not at all. His intellectual toolkit is what makes him so unique. He's got a deep understanding of literary theory, Christian theology, classical philosophy, like Aristotle.
And you mentioned Marxist critique. That feels like an unusual piece of the puzzle for this topic.
It's absolutely crucial to his argument. Because for Eagleton, the search for meaning isn't just a personal spiritual quest. It's deeply connected to our social and political structures. Think about it. If you spend your days in a meaningless, alienating job just to pay the bills, how can you be expected to feel a sense of purpose? His Marxist lens forces us to see how the system itself can actually block us from living meaningful lives.
So personal anxiety is linked to political reality. That's a powerful connection. And his writing style, it's not dense and academic, is it?
Not at all. It's rigorous, for sure, but it's also accessible and has this fantastic, sometimes irreverent wit. He treats this as an urgent human problem, not a puzzle for
Oh, I
academics.
love that. Okay, so let's get into the core of the book. What is the central argument he's building?
At its heart, it's a rejection of both extremes. He says meaning isn't handed down from the heavens, but it's not lost in some empty void either.
So where is it?
It's something we build, something we create, and crucially, something we practice together, right here on Earth.
So meaning is a verb, not a noun. It's something you do.
Exactly. And he gets very specific about what that doing looks like. He argues it emerges from being in relationship with others,
Through what kind of activities?
primarily through love, through creativity, and through moral action. His goal is to give us a real, tangible framework for living well, especially for those of us who feel, let's say, dissatisfied with both easy answers and no answers.
And it all ties together with one big idea, right? The final hook.
It does. For Eagleton, the ultimate source of meaning is found in the quality of our shared lives. It's rooted in a specific kind of love agape, which leads to our mutual flourishing, what the Greeks called eudaimonia.
Mutual flourishing, I like that. But before we get to the solution, he first has to deconstruct why we're even asking this question so urgently today.
Right. He points out that this is a very modern problem. People in the Middle Ages weren't really sitting around having an existential crisis about the meaning of it all.
Why not?
Because the answer was just built into the structure of their world.
Yeah.
Your role in society, your religious duties, meaning was a byproduct of just doing what you were supposed to do. The crisis only happens when those structures, tradition, faith, community, start to fall apart.
Which is what happened with the rise of individualism and secularism.
Exactly. And he brings in the philosopher Wittgenstein here, who suggested that the question itself, what is the meaning of life, might actually be a kind of linguistic mistake.
A mistake. How?
We treat life like it's an object, like a book that has a single hidden meaning we need to figure out. But life isn't an object, it's a process. It's like asking, what is the meaning of walking? The meaning is in the act of doing it, not somewhere outside of it.
That's a really helpful way to think about it. And it helps explain why he's so critical of the historical answers we've been given. He starts with the religious ones.
Yeah, he acknowledges their power to give structure and comfort. But he says they can also reduce our freedom. If our only purpose is to play a part in some cosmic plan, we can become just instruments.
Our choices aren't really free. They're about obedience.
Right. Then he looks at the Enlightenment idea, you know, that science and reason will eventually tell us our purpose.
But they can't, can they?
No. Science is incredible at telling us how the world works, the facts. But it's totally silent on values. It can't tell us how we should live. That requires choice and commitment, which is beyond what science can offer.
Okay, and what about the most common answer today, the one you see everywhere in pop culture? The idea that you just create your own meaning.
Ah, yes. The romantic individualistic approach. He is pretty brutal in his critique of this.
Right, it sounds so empowering.
He argues it's a recipe for narcissism and total isolation. If meaning is something I just invent for myself with no connection to anyone else or any shared values,
then it's completely untestable. It's just whatever I feel like.
Exactly. It's solipsistic. And it ignores a fundamental truth about us.
Mm-hmm.
We are social animals. We're built for connection. A purely private meaning is, ironically, often meaningless.
So after knocking down all the answers that promise something, he turns to the ones that promise nothing. Nihilism and absurdism. People like Camus.
He has a lot of respect for their intellectual honesty. You know, Camus's image of Sisyphus, forever pushing a rock up a hill. It's a powerful metaphor for the human desire for meaning in a silent universe.
The lonely rebellion.
Yes. But ultimately, he rejects it as a way to live.
Why?
Because it's too individualistic. It's too lonely. It diagnoses the problem brilliantly, but it overlooks all the joy and solidarity and connection that happens between people despite the universe's indifference. Sisyphus is always alone.
And Eagleton's answer is that we're not alone. That's the pivot then, moving from critique to construction.
This is where he builds his positive case. And the foundation for it all is love. But we have to be very, very specific about what kind of love he means.
Not romantic love, I'm guessing.
Definitely not. He uses the Greek term agape. It's an active, unconditional commitment to the well-being of others. It's less of a feeling and more of a practice.
Okay, but that sounds incredibly difficult, almost utopian. How does that work in the real world?
He defines it as a process of mutual fulfillment. The argument is, I can only find my own fulfillment by actively helping you find yours, and vice versa.
So you can't flourish in a vacuum.
You can't.
Yeah.
It demands a community of care.
Yeah.
So agape is the practice, and the goal it's aiming for is human flourishing.
Eudaimonia.
Exactly. He borrows that from Aristotle. And it isn't just about being happy. It's about fully realizing our unique human capacities for reason, for creativity, for compassion.
Okay, so this is where it all comes together. Individual freedom, collective responsibility, which brings us to his famous analogy.
A jazz band.
I love this one.
It's the perfect metaphor. Think of a great jazz band. Each musician is a master of their instrument. They have total freedom to improvise, to be creative, to express their unique voice.
But it's not just chaos. It's not just random notes.
Not at all. Because that individual freedom is only meaningful because it's happening inside a shared structure. The harmony, the rhythm. They are constantly listening to each other, responding to each other.
So the brilliant solo makes the whole band sound better.
And the band's harmony gives the solo its context and its meaning. Individual fulfillment and collective well-being become the exact same thing.
That's such a liberating idea. It means rules and structures aren't necessarily prisons. They can be the very things that give our freedom its shape.
Precisely. And once you see it that way, you can't ignore the political side of it.
Right. This is his first big theme, that meaning is a social and political project.
Absolutely. If a meaningful life requires mutual care and flourishing, then a system built on hyper-individualism and competition, which he would argue is capitalism, is actively working against our ability to live meaningfully.
So when we feel lost or alienated, it's not just a personal failure. It might be a symptom of the system we're living in.
That's his point, which leads to another key theme. Meaning is a practice, not a proposition.
It's something you do, not a secret you learn.
Yes. And my favorite idea in the whole book stems from this. He says the real opposite of a meaningful life isn't an absurd one.
What is it?
It's a trivial one.
Ooh. That hits home.
It's such a powerful insight.
Mm-hmm.
The danger isn't cosmic despair. It's wasting our incredible human potential on, you know, shallow consumerism or meaningless work. We get distracted into triviality.
He also talks about the importance of art and suffering, which seems counterintuitive for a book about flourishing.
But it's essential. A meaningful life has to engage with reality, and reality includes suffering and death. Art gives us a way to process that. And fighting against suffering, standing in solidarity with others, that's one of the most powerful sources of meaning there is.
So this all brings us back to the practical. How can someone listening right now start applying these ideas?
Okay, first thing, shift your focus. Stop looking for that one single secret purpose for your life. Focus on building meaning day by day through the quality of your actions.
Build it. Don't find it. I like that. What's second?
Cultivate community. Seriously. If individualism is the problem, connection is the answer. Invest time and energy in your relationships. Practice agape. Meaning happens between people.
Number three.
Reevaluate your creative work. Maybe your job is fulfilling, maybe it's not, but find somewhere in your life where you can engage in a truly creative practice, something that serves a human purpose beyond just making money.
And finally, I assume we should all start a jazz band.
Or at least embrace the jazz band model. Apply that idea to your family or your team at work. How can you encourage individual expression while making sure everyone is supporting the shared song?
It's a fantastic model for life. So when you boil it all down, what's Eagleton's single biggest contribution here?
For me, it's that he takes this huge ancient question and grounds it in our real material political lives. He tells us that the meaning of life isn't a riddle to be solved. It's an ethical and political achievement.
And I think what I'll take away is that idea about freedom and structure. That real freedom, that beautiful improvisation, actually requires commitment to the song we're all playing together. It's such a hopeful, humane, and deeply practical way to look at everything.
It gives us work to do, which is, I think, the whole point.
Exactly. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecotra Foundation.